Good afternoon. We're continuing our study of Spiritual Power of Truth by Joel Goldsmith. We are on chapter 15, A Great Secret. He doesn't say that lightly. He means there's a secret which he's going to impart if you are able to receive it. And so he begins with, if God is revealing himself, there is nothing to be afraid of. We talked about that last week. Sometimes if you read stories of initiations, spiritual initiations, you will discover that in these initiations you have to go through some terrible experiences. Remember, he was talking about the lady that felt like she was falling. That is true. You do. But the thing is to make up your mind that this is the way it's going to be, and be a beholder and go through it. Now, if you're trying to control the situation mentally or physically, it's going to make a struggle. If you let go and act as a beholder and live just watching it, you'll go right through. It is not like anything we expected, therefore we think it is terrible. It is not terrible when it is finished, if we can stand long enough to go through it. I shared with you my experience, feeling the presence filling my body, filling the room, filling the house, and I was that presence, and the presence was I. And I knew the next step it was going to go infinite, and that was quite a bit unsettling. But it subsided and came back down to normal consciousness. But it was scary at that second, in the silence with nobody around. Just infinite eye. Secrecy in spiritual matters is likened to the womb. The seed is planted in the womb, and if it is kept there, if it is not kept there, dark and secret, sacred, and fed within, it never will become the being. Never. Secrecy is the womb of the spiritual life. That is where we take every experience, right into the womb of secrecy and sacredness. It must be sacred. Human conception is something sacred. It is another individualization of God appearing. That is what it is. And in that light, it is not a human being that is born. And it is not the product of a carnal act that is taking place. It is I and the Father becoming one. And out of that oneness is coming another one. When our young couples, through spiritual study, realize this, and realize that conception is not a carnal act, not something to be afraid of or ashamed of, or something that is merely an act of pleasure, that actually it is part of the nature of living, then we shall discover that the seed is something sacred, not vulgar. It will be buried in the womb, and it will be held there secretly and sacredly, as if we were waiting for God to appear. Christ incarnate. We are waiting for Christ to appear, the Son of God to appear. When our youngsters wait with the understanding that they are waiting for the incarnation of Christ to appear, parentage will be something sacred, children will be something sacred, and we will begin living spiritually on earth. A lot of people, now I first read this when I was about 18 years old, and boy, was I glad to read this. A lot of people would like to convince us that if we are spiritual, there will be no sexual relationship. However, if that is so, then we will be so spiritual that we will not have to eat either. And we won't have to drink. And I do not believe that we are going to reach that state for a while. I do believe that our spiritual life for a long time to come is going to be lived on earth, and that the method of the progressive life will be as it is now, only instead of being accepted as just a human act, it is going to be understood as God's way of revealing himself or his son on earth. It is God's way of expressing Christhood on earth. Then the whole of this life is going to be sacred. So that's good. The Infinite Way approves of sexual relationships when you have this attitude. And isn't that wonderful? To those of you who have been students of the Infinite Way for a very long time, that would be a lot of us, wouldn't it? Many of you active in the practice or the healing work, as some of you at least starting it, I must bring to your attention the fact that you are engaged in a work that must inevitably set you apart from the rest of the people of the world. It either will, or you will not get too far in your spiritual development. You should realize by now that merely improving your health or the amount of your supply is insignificant in comparison with the idea of actually finding the secret of life that is behind the appearance, behind what you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. You have realized by now that there is a great secret behind this world. It is a secret unknown to any of the religions, unknown to any of the philosophies, unknown to any man whose breath is in his nostrils. It is a secret of life that no man can know with his mind. It would make no difference what he studies or where he goes to study. This secret he will never discover. That is why so few have entered in. If you're seeking the secret to the universe, the secret to meditation, the secret to your own life, the secret behind this world, and if you are seeking that with all your mind, you cannot find it. You will never find it. Some other instrument must be used. Not the mind, not the body. Something else must be used to find it. The teachings of the world have not gone beyond seeking truth through the mind, seeking truth through books, seeking truth through teachings, and of course, until you arrive at that place in consciousness where you realize that you are never going to find the truth this way, you have not even begun your spiritual journey. Well, that's kind of heavy duty, isn't it? until you have this realization. I am never going to find God with this mind. Dang it. What do I have to do? Until you reach that place in consciousness where you realize that, you're never going to find the truth. You have not even begun your spiritual journey. Haven't even begun. Because God is known only by the Spirit. And you have to climb into Spirit and let the mind rest, and Spirit will take you across. Your journey begins only when you come to the realization that going on as you have been going means you are never going to learn the truth. This secret behind the universe, because it is not to be known with the mind or through the mind. While it is true that you do not know what the word Spirit means, nevertheless, God is Spirit. And that in itself means that God is something that you do not know or understand. And since you have been searching almost a whole lifetime, it must get to be discouraging. It is discouraging because inevitably that realization does come. I never am going to discover God or Spirit. And my search is frustrating. What do I have to look forward to? And when you reach that point, you may be starting on your spiritual journey. Because you will have reached the place where you can say, "Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth," and mean it, really mean it. If you do not speak, and I do not hear what you say, there's going to be no answer. When you reach that place, it actually means that you have come to the end of faith and hope and belief, and the human mind is ever going to reveal spiritual truth to you. That's a heck of a step. He says, abandon all hope of finding God. In one of our classes many years ago, we had that for a title, Abandon Hope, All Ye Who Enter Here. All you who enter this class, because in this class you will not find Him. In this message you will not find Him. The reason is, the kingdom of God is within you. All right, so the human mind may have brought you to the place where you can intellectually agree with all this. But we know by now, don't we, that's not enough. That comes far short of what is required. And when in your frustration and discouragement, you really do realize, I'm never going to find this. I've spent my whole life, and I have yet to find it. Well, then Joel says, we have started the beginning of our search. Why? Because now we're ready, we're willing to let go of the mind as an instrument that'll help us find God. And in our meditation, we stop using the mind. We stop using it. Hey, be still up there. Be still. I'm tired of you. I want to know the Spirit. The Spirit must take me across. What is the Spirit? What is this presence that sometimes is with me? Sometimes it's upon me or through me. This Spirit is what must take me across to realization, to spiritually experience oneness. And now my life begins to change. I begin to become a beholder. Out here I behold as things fall together. I find myself in the right place at the right time. And I did not consciously think anything to get here. I simply beheld. I live, yet not I. Now, Christ, you live. And within, it's the same. No conscious thought will take me to the presence of God. It is I, Spirit. Be not afraid. I will take you across in a way ye know not of. And so be still. Let the Spirit be upon you. Let this presence take you across. To the actual feeling, the conscious feeling of omnipresence, of omnipotence, of omniscience, of omnipresence. It is I. Be not afraid. Now, at this point in consciousness where you are, you do know that God is not going to be revealed to you in my words. The only opportunity of God's being revealed to you in our relationship is in what my consciousness can impart and what your consciousness can receive, independent of words and thoughts. Consciousness, remember, is spirit. And so, what my spirit can impart, and in what your spirit can receive, independent of words and thoughts. In other words, there must be a relationship between us that transcends words and thoughts. There must be a state of consciousness that can receive that which is attained, that which an attained spiritual consciousness can impart. The teacher can impart it without words and thoughts, but as a rule, the teacher will use the means of words and thoughts and then let the spirit in between do the actual imparting, that is, carry the import of the message. So, you go to one of Joel's classes, you sit in the front row or near the front, you listen to him up at the podium, and he's speaking these words. And he's having these thoughts. And you may listen to the whole thing and go out of the class and have no experience whatsoever. But if you at home, before you went, if you are beginning to realize only Spirit can take me across, nothing in my mind can do it. There's not a word or any set of words. There's no secret formula. Nothing will take me across. It must be Spirit. Then you go to his class, and in the 15-minute meditation before the class begins, You turn within yourself, Spirit. Spirit, please make me receptive. I listen for your voice. Please impart to me what I need to hear. And in whatever way you talk to Spirit within you, you come to a place where you are receptive. Now you tune into what Joel's saying up front. Suddenly you have a revelation within you. Oh, I see. Whereas before I was blind, now I see. There really is a Spirit of God. And it really is my consciousness and thy consciousness. For there is one consciousness. Now, after a break, you come back to the class. You're resting in the awareness of spiritual consciousness. And something will take place within you. You will be carried across to the other side behind this universe. I am leading up to this for a reason. I knew when The Thunder of Silence was published that I could not expect many people in the world to understand it or grasp it, not even our students. I did not expect it, and I still do not expect it for many, many years to come. The reason is that from the very outset, the message it gives contradicts the entire teaching of Christianity. You see, he knew that only someone in the Spirit, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, only someone in the Spirit could catch it, could see behind this universe and feel what was being imparted by Spirit. Now, I've known a lot of people that have read The Thunder of Silence, and many are in agreement. But nothing changes. You see them, and they're still doing the same thing years later that they were doing when you first met them. Nothing changes. So they're not catching it. Yes, they're reading it. They may even meditate on it. They may have a realization about a sentence or two. But they don't catch that spiritual impulse, which is the only thing that'll take them across the river of reason into the sacred, secret forest of spiritual consciousness. You must be startled at realizing how many sweet, loving, wonderful, good, and charitable people there are in the world whom God is not rewarding. It must amaze you how many evil people there are in the world that not only the law has not reached yet, but even God has not put his finger on. As a thinker, you must ponder this. You have to give time and effort and thought to it. So it is that the longer you seek the answer with your mind, the more frustrating this is going to be. If you do not have an answer to it, you may be assured, not only will your frustration in life continue, but the solution to life's problems will not be given to you. It is for this reason that those who were present when the first unfoldment came through my lips witnessed the fact that what came through my lips was not anything that I had known even 5 minutes before. Yes, this is the same time that he said to a group of students, "Thought is not power." And he didn't know that 5 minutes before either. It was something that came through and startled me as much as it did any of those who were listening and caught it. Be assured, I had to do a great deal of thinking and meditating after the message came through in order to realize the astounding nature of what it was. I even said afterward, "I hope there were no reporters present, because if that message were reported in the papers, I am sure the churches would have done to me what they did to the ancient revelators, which is they crucified them." That day the message that came through said, "God neither punishes nor rewards." You search the literature and see what a startling message that is. Since God neither punishes nor rewards, and as we have found, there is a certain amount of punishment and reward that goes on in this world, what is the answer? The answer that came through was what the Hindus call karmic law, that which Jesus called, "As ye sow, so shall ye reap." Whether you quote the Orient or whether you quote Jesus, you throw all Christian teachings out the window, because if it is "as ye sow, so shall ye reap," then it has nothing to do with God on either the punishment side or the reward side. It has to do with the law that you set in motion. When we go to Brother Paul, we find him receiving that same revelation from the Christ. "If you sow to the Spirit, you will reap life everlasting. If you sow to the flesh, you will reap corruption." So here we have it in the basic Christian teachings, "As ye sow, so shall ye reap." Please leave God out of it. I know this is very ingrained in us, because I know this to be true. And I still catch the mind, the human mind, saying, "Oh, sorry, Father, for something I felt that I shouldn't have done." Or just kind of feeling superior because I did something selfless. Now, both of those feelings, thoughts, are erroneous. They stem from the belief that God rewards or punishes. So it's very deeply ingrained in us, and it takes some time to let it go. You know, you're watching TV and the announcer says, "Well, look at that. I guess maybe that's karma." And they laugh, "Ha ha." And you agree with them while you're watching it. "Yeah, ha ha." Because you're forgetting the truth. So this is very deeply ingrained, and it takes a while to become free. But we will become free as we walk this path. Unfortunately, he says, the basic Christian teaching was not incorporated into the Christian church. It is for this reason that Dr. Carl Jung, was able to write that he never had a case of a person over 35 years of age who had been healed through his ministry without a return to basic religion. However, it was not the religion of the churches. He emphasized not the teaching of the churches. Why did he make that distinction? The teaching Dr. Jung gave to the world in his latter years came to him through a revelation. Now, back in the 30s, there was a man named Ebby. And Ebby had a drinking problem. And he could not get free. He went to every doctor he could find, every psychologist, and finally he decided, I'll go to Dr. Carl Jung. He should be able to help me. I mean, his teacher was Freud. So between Freud and Dr. Jung, surely there'll be some hope there. So he went to Carl Jung and he said, why can't I stop drinking? And this is what the doctor told him. The doctor said, I can't help you. You are going to have to find the basic spiritual premises that original religion was founded upon. Well, the guy said, I go to church. I can do that. And Carl Jung said, no, that's not enough. You have to find the underlying principles and practice them until you have your own spiritual experience, and then you will be healed. So Ebby went away, not knowing what to do. But he heard about something called the Oxford Groups. Now, the Oxford Groups believed in four absolutes: absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, absolute love. And they practiced spiritual principles around those absolutes. And Ebby got with them and he practiced them and he stopped drinking. But one of the absolutes was that you had to practice lifting up your brother. So Ebby went over to see a guy named Bill Wilson, Bill W., and he told Bill about it. And Bill said, oh, okay, yeah, let me show you to the door. And yet, within a very short period of time, Bill found himself in a hospital, and his doctor, Dr. Silkworth, said, you are beyond all human aid, and you are going to die or go permanently insane. You will develop a permanent wet brain. And Bill said, I can't stop, doctor. I want to, but I can't. And then while he was in his room by himself, he remembered what Ebby had said. And so he, in total desperation, he got on his knees and he said, God, reveal yourself to me now. And whambo, he had this spiritual experience where he felt lifted up like a wind was blowing through. He had a conscious awareness of the Spirit of the living God. So he called the doctor to his room, and he said, "Doctor," and he told the doctor about it. And the doctor said, "Well, I don't know what happened, but whatever it is, you better hang on to it, because you're making sense for the first time in years." And Bill did hang on to it. He never had another drink. But he found that he had to give it away, too. He had to help his brother. And so he was on a business trip from New York. He went to Akron, Ohio. And the business trip fell apart. He was hoping to get out of the dumps in which he found himself. His drinking had caused him a lot of limitation and lacks. And he was hoping this business deal would pull him out. But it didn't happen. It fell apart. He stood in the hotel lobby. He heard people laughing and clinking of glasses in the barroom. And he thought, "Should I go in there?" But see, Bill had a problem with blackouts. If he picked up a drink, he might not come to again for another 3 days, and he might wake up in Miami or Chicago or L.A. or even Australia. He turned the other way and he saw a phone booth. And for some reason, he thought to himself, I'm going to give the preacher a call. So he called around and he talked to doctors and preachers. And, "Do you know anybody that has a drinking problem? I'll go and talk to them and I'll help them." And eventually they found somebody, a guy named Dr. Bob. He was a surgeon. He couldn't operate very well because his hands were shaking from withdrawals. So Bill went to see him. And Bob got sober. He never took another drink. He was tempted for a long time. Because I suspect his spiritual awakening was of the educational variety. It slowly seeped in. Whereas Bill's was a cataclysmic experience. So together they started meetings there in Akron, Ohio. And that became the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which today has over 2 million members. Just from that room. Just from Bill's willingness for that power to use him. And so they told someone, and that person told someone, and that person told someone, and eventually there was a guy on a business trip out to Los Angeles, and he told somebody, and he told somebody, and he told Don, and Don became my first teacher. And Don told me, "You are beyond all human aid, and unless you find a power greater than your intellect, you are going to die from this disease, even if you don't drink." And later, Don gave me a copy of The Art of Meditation, which was the first book I ever had, by Goldsmith. And that led to my first spiritual experience way back in 1973. So, when I read here that Dr. Jung said he had never had one person over the age of 35 who had been healed without a return to basic religion, that man is the reason I'm making this talk all these years later. I would not be sitting here if he hadn't said that to Ebby. All right, so it's amazing, huh? This is my family. It's a direct line back to Carl Jung. And from Carl Jung back to God. From Bill W. back to God. From Don back to God. And from myself back to God. Let us, says Joel, for a moment, think of God as life, the life of the universe. The life of nature. As well as our own lives. Since God is from everlasting to everlasting, the nature of God must be eternity, infinity. There could be nothing in the nature of God that would shorten the life of man or the universe. Therefore, the life of man must be eternal and immortal. Right here you have no punishment, because all of our sins and diseases and deaths are supposed to be due to punishment. All our accidents, all the evils that befall us are supposed to be due to punishment of one nature or another. God's will, it is called. God's will. That an airplane collapses with 100 people on board. God's will that a steamship burns at sea or hits an iceberg. Do you not see that this was not in the original teaching of Jesus Christ? You can let go of all that, my friends. If you've been holding yourself into bondage, into lack and limitation, because you think you deserve it, just stop. Just stop. Become still. Let the Spirit take you across. God could not have provided both a punishment for sinners and forgiveness at the same time. Therefore, if you go back to the basic teaching of Jesus Christ, you will discover that there is no punishment through God, and no reward through God, and that it is as you sow, so shall you reap. Of course, when you turn to the Oriental teachings, where they have karma, you will also discover that it is your sowing that results in your reaping, and your reaping goes on until the sowing changes. How can the sowing change? How can your sowing change? When you reach this place, he's trying to lead all of us to, where you say within yourself, I am never going to find God with my mind. You will stop sowing. When you reach the place where you totally let go and let the Spirit take you across, then the Spirit will be sowing through you, and you shall reap life everlasting, life eternal, life immortal. If you can catch solidly and firmly this revelation in the thunder of silence, it's been a lot of years since we've looked at that. Perhaps it's time to look at it again. I don't know. But if you can catch solidly and firmly this revelation in the thunder of silence and actually bear witness to the fact or come to a conviction within yourself, and can leave God right out of your calculations, out of your thinking, as far as your rewards and punishments, out of your thinking, out of your rewards and punishments, or your health and sickness, or your life and death, see if you cannot grasp this principle: as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Then make the acknowledgement, regardless of where I am in life, regardless of what experience I may now be having, somewhere or other, there is a sowing in my consciousness that is responsible for a reaping. And see if you cannot find it. If you can grasp this teaching of the infinite way, you are halfway home. Because if you are still seeking around in your mind, hoping for a God to do something or change something, you are still back in orthodoxy. You are still waiting for that which is not going to happen. Whatever is going to happen as an activity of your consciousness. Until you come to the full realization of the startling nature of what I am saying to you, it does not seem startling to you at all now. And the only reason it does not is that you have not grasped it. But when you reach that, the rest is going to be easy, because I will tell you a secret of something that is operating in the back of your consciousness unnecessarily and causing you distress. There is still a belief in your thought that some acts of commission or omission on your part are responsible for your discords or inharmonies. In other words, you are being punished. Here again is where the church has led you completely astray, because the church is 100% in error in telling you that any sin of yours is responsible for the woes that you may have experienced or may be experiencing, or think you ever may experience. Be assured it isn't that way at all. You just might as well forgive yourself right now and forget about your past. Forget about your past sins or present ones of commission or omission. Drop out of your thought right now that it was any error of yours. Remember, when I speak this way, I am telling you what you must be holding in thought about your patients and students as well. Do not forget that I am not speaking primarily to you who already have come a great part of the way along this path. I am reminding you of what you must be revealing to your patients and students in order to free them from their guilt complexes and from the belief that they should be expecting a reward for the good things they have done in life, or a punishment for the bad things that they may have done, or for the good things they left undone. You must set them free. You perhaps have been in great measure already set free by your studies and work. But I am giving this to you so that you may complete your demonstration, that you may have the full awareness of dealing with those who come to you. What is the sowing and the reaping that is causing the distresses of the people of earth? Paul summed it up, and we will have to do what he probably did, which never got into print. We will have to explain it. Paul merely stated it. To those around him, he may have explained it, but it was never printed. If you sow to the Spirit, you will reap life everlasting. If you sow to the flesh, you will reap corruption. That is the statement, and the explanation is this. You were born into a material sense of life. Therefore, you have been sowing to the flesh all of your human life. You have put your entire hope, faith, and confidence into form, into effect. We have been brought up naturally to believe that money was supply. And it is this teaching that really causes all the lack and limitation on earth. Because whether you believe that money or crops were supply, it is equally in error. Consciousness is supply. And remember, consciousness is spirit. Consciousness is supply. Spirit is supply. The invisible is supply. That over which you have no control, but that which can, when you permit it, control you. Yes, if you agree with this, really, really, truly agree with it, you will ask yourself, how do I stop sowing to humanhood? And how do I start sowing to spirit? Remember, within we have to let spirit take us across. And out here, we have to allow spirit to sow. To believe for a moment that money, investments, securities, jobs, or professions, and business are your supply, or just to be born into the belief that they are supply, makes you go out to get these. And thereby cheats you of the demonstration of supply, because these are not supply. When you go far enough in the message of the infinite way, you will discover, I am supply. That I embody and embrace within me the infinity of supply. And not only for my own use, I could feed 5,001, because greater works than these shall ye do. Supply is that invisible spiritual presence that you feel in your meditations. Now, I is God. I am the bread, the meat, the wine, the water. I am the resurrection. I am supply. I am life eternal. I can give you water. Drinking it, you will never thirst again. I am the bread of life. Until you actually accept that, you are going to be sowing to the flesh, and you are going to reap limitation. Now, it could be $1 million worth of limitation, but it's still limitation. You see people who win the lotto and they win $1.4 million, and then after taxes they have about $800,000, and then they buy a fancy car and some jewelry. Before you know it, they're out of money. It's gone. They're stuck in limitation because that was where their consciousness was. Therefore, just to be born into an ordinary family means to be born into limitation, into the struggle to earn a living, into strife. Whereas in being born into a family of spiritual understanding, a child would be brought up right from the beginning to sow to the spirit, realizing that love is supply, life is supply, God is supply, I am supply. That child would grow up with such a different concept of supply that it would never work for it, or struggle for it, or lie for it, or cheat for it. Whatever activity the child understood, and do not forget, some would be artists and doctors and lawyers, they would be doing it for the joy of life. They would be doing it as a gift of God, a grace of God. It really makes no difference what work you are doing in life the moment you are not doing it for a living. It becomes a joy. Now, this work that I am doing right this moment, in making this talk, in reading the book and preparing the chapter, and then sitting down and putting on the headset and recording this talk, and then making the announcement, uploading it, proofing it, making the announcement that it's there, all of that is not work to me. All of that is a joy. I love this, and I love you. When you are doing it for a living, you cannot help watching the clock. The moment that you do not connect supply with your living, then your activity, your work, your art or business, your profession becomes such a joy that you are giving yourself to it. You are sowing to the spirit. Supply, then, may come through that avenue, and it may come through very many others. All right. So, we are to learn how to let spirit sow as our life. And we are to let spirit, not the mind, let spirit take us across the river of reason into the dark, sacred forest of spiritual consciousness. And there we will find our treasures. There are treasures there to be found. I want to thank you. I never quite saw this in this light before, and it's your fault because you draw this out of me. And so I've never seen this in this light before. It's wonderful. Spirit without and spirit within. Thank you ever so much. Have a wonderful week. God bless you.